tying them in place as tight as he could get them, and when he was done, the raft was stout enough for him to stand on, jump on, walk back and forth on. It was about 8 feet long, 5.5 feet wide, and floated well out of the water, and had not taken him more than 2 hours to build. He had gone back twice to check on Derek while working, and now that it was finished, he cut a long pole for pushing the raft, and used his knife to carve a crude paddle, then moved back to the camp before bringing the raft. He was not hungry, still felt too nervous for hunger, but knew he should eat before they started or he would be too weak. So he ate nuts and some berries they'd stored in a birch bark cone, ate everything he could find in the shelter, they wouldn't need it on the run, and examined Derek closely one more time while he ate. This whole thing, he knew, was crazy and had only a small chance of working. He knew that, understood that. If there was one thing he understood about working in an emergency, surviving, it was that there was a large measure of luck involved. And if there was the slightest, tiniest change in Derek, any indication at all that he was coming out of it, Brian would call the trip off and hope for the best. So he studied Derek, worked at it as hard as he could. He looked into the unconscious man's eyes and saw nothing, just the glazed look that was there before. He carefully measured his breathing and his heartbeat and found them to be the same, exactly as they had been since he'd started to keep track of them. He yelled into Derek's ear, looking for some reaction in the eyes, and there was no sign of any kind that he could hear or that he could react to hearing. Finally, he tried pain. He used the tip of his knife to poke Derek's hand, again watching the man's eyes, and there was simply nothing, even when he poked hard enough to draw a small drop of blood. No sign of any kind of life or knowledge except the breathing and the heartbeat. Then he waited a few minutes and did it all again, working steadily, carefully, and it was the same. He had to be certain, absolutely certain, that there was no choice. And he was. He stood and looked across the lake and felt strangely old. It was his decision to make, and yet another man could die because of what he decided. He had never been in this position, and it frightened him. Even when he was in danger, even when he had to fight just to live, his decisions only affected him, never another person. And now Derek lay there, and Brian looked down to where he'd pulled the raft to the shore by the shelter and opened his mouth and said, "We go." It came out as a whisper. Right or wrong, they had to do it. Brian had to do it. "Please, God," he thought, and did not finish it. Just that. "Please, God." He turned to face Derek and coughed and said it again, loud and clear. "We go." It proved to be almost impossible to start. Brian took the briefcase down to the raft and decided to take a weapon. He left the bow but took two lances he had made. One fish spear with twin tines held open with a small stick that he had made to show Derek that you could use a spear as well as a bow to take small fish. The other was a straight spear with a fire-hardened point that he'd decided to use, if necessary, on a moose. "Did it really attack you?" Derek had asked when he told of his time near the L-shaped lake and the moose attack. "Really come at you?" "And stayed with it," Brian said. "I couldn't do anything. It just kept coming back, pushing me down underwater until I pretended to be dead. Next time, I'm going to fight back." So he had made the spear and hoped that he would never have to use it. When the spears and the briefcase were on the raft, he went back to the camp. Derek, the true reason for the raft. He had to get Derek down to the raft and on it without hurting him, or worse, drowning him. He turned Derek onto his back, grabbed him under the shoulders, and tried to pull him down the bank. Derek didn't move. Brian pulled, and the man just lay still, and Brian looked to see if his shoe had caught on a root by the fire or in the brush, but it had not. It just couldn't be that hard to move a, he almost thought, body, person. Just a person on his back, he ought simply to skid down the bank. In the end, Brian did get him to skid, about 3 inches at a time. He heaved and jerked and pulled until finally Derek was on the bank, lying on his side, facing the water. There was a small ledge and a drop of approximately 6 inches to the water. This close into the shore, the lake was very shallow, not enough water to float the raft, and Brian had to horse the raft sideways to get it in so that it was lying sideways next to Derek and just below him, grounded on the mud of the bottom. He kneeled in the water next to the raft. He had been soaked since starting to build the raft and figured to remain wet until they made it. He did not wish to think of the alternatives. He used his hip to jam the raft into the bank and reached across to pull Derek onto the raft. Again, it was like moving lead weight. Derek seemed bolted to the earth, and Brian had to settle for pulling first one end, then the other, back and forth, from Derek's arms to his ankles, until the man was at last on the raft, which settled into the mud of the bottom under Derek's weight and remained solid. Brian positioned him first on his back, and then decided he might choke and moved him over onto his side in the center of the raft. The middle crosspiece on the raft caught Derek in the soft part just above his hip and helped to hold him in place, but Brian did not think it would be enough. He tore more strips from his jacket and made a tie-down. This he used to go from one side of the raft over Derek's shoulders to the other side to tie him into position. Finally, with Derek lashed in, Brian used Derek's own jacket rolled up to make a pillow, which he worked beneath Derek's head. He checked the breathing and heartbeat again, and he was surprised to see that he did it almost automatically. It had just been hours, just over a day and a half, and he was already reacting automatically. "Derek, I don't know if you can hear me." He settled in the water next to the grounded raft and spoke to Derek's face. "I'm going to tell you anyway. We're going to take this raft down the river that leads from the lake. It's just under 100 miles to a trading post. The thing is, we can't stay here because, well, it just wouldn't work. And the radio was blown by the same lightning that hit you, so we can't call for help. So we have to do this. We have to do this." He shook his head, choked, realized that he was close to crying. "Oh, hell, we just have to do this. I hope it works out." He started to work the raft out of the mud and float it free when he thought of something. What if they came unexpectedly? If they just found Derek and Brian gone, they wouldn't know what to think. He had to leave a note. He opened the briefcase and took out a pencil and a notebook. He wrote in large block letters, "Big storm. Derek hit by lightning and in coma. Trying to raft river down to Brannock's trading post, 100 miles south. Come quick. Brian Robeson." He studied the note, then added the date and time. He'd left the radio behind back up in the campsite, thinking it would be in the way. He ran back up to the shelter and found the radio in its plastic case and folded the note and put it in the case so that it stuck out slightly. Then he tied the radio back up under the overhang with its carrying strap so that anybody coming into the shelter would be certain to see it. Back at the raft, he found that Derek's weight had pushed it into the bottom so hard it was difficult to get loose. He sawed it back and forth, one end out, then the other, and finally it broke free, though floating still in little more than a foot of water. "Good place to test it," he said. It seemed very stable with just Derek on it, and Brian carefully eased his knees onto the end by Derek's feet. The end sank lower a few inches, but still was well above the surface. He raised on his knees and rocked back and forth, ready to jump off if it started over. The raft bobbed back to level and settled from the roll fast, the flat bottom slapping the water lightly. "It's seaworthy." He climbed back off the raft and checked Derek again. He was resting in the same position. Some water had come up between the logs and made his shoulders wet, but his head was up on the jacket pillow and was still dry. Brian looked at the sun. It was mid-afternoon. Dark was still 5 or 6 hours away, not that it mattered. Once they started, they would have to keep moving, even through the night if they could. Time was everything. The river left the lake at the south end, a good half mile away. Rather than try to move the raft across the lake, he decided to pull it around the edge in the shallows, and he started moving along the shore. The raft followed easily, and Brian let himself feel just the slightest bit positive for the first time since the lightning had hit them. The raft seemed to work well. The weather was holding. They had a map. And most of all, Derek was still alive. They had a shot at it. Their luck held. Where the river left the lake, it cut a deeper channel in the soft bottom. It took Brian half an hour to move the raft down the side of the lake, pulling it along by hand, and where the river exited, he moved to the left shore and stopped for a moment. One last thought. He could still go back. It would be easy to take the raft back around the lake, and possible, though certainly not easy, to drag Derek back up to the shelter. Once they were on the river, with the current, he would not be able to work back. But he hesitated only a moment. Any choosing was already finished, and he shook his head. It was done. He climbed onto the back of the raft, kneeling at Derek's feet as he had before, and used the pole to push it away from the bank and out into the current. The river was 60 or 70 feet across, leaving the lake, and the current at the side seemed a bit slower. It caught the raft and pulled the nose around, so it aimed downstream, but along the edge, bouncing against the bank and sliding beneath overhanging willows and brush. Brian used the pole. The bottom was 4 or 5 feet down, and pushed the raft sideways out into the center. It hesitated, seemed to hold for a moment as if trying to find the current, then the moving water caught the logs and the raft started to move. Inside of 30 feet it was matching the current, or close to it, and Brian watched the bank sliding past as the raft moved silently down the river. "We're on the way," he said to Derek. "It's working, and we're on the way." For 100 yards the river moved straight, then curved hard to the left around a small hill where Brian quickly found that a log raft is not the same as a boat. The current was not fast. As he had guessed earlier, it was about the speed of a person walking, but it was steady and strong. The logs were heavy, and once they were moving in a direction, they were hard to turn. As a matter of fact, Brian thought, watching the bank at the end of the curve come at him, they were impossible to turn. The river curved left, and the raft went straight, cut across the curve and jammed into the bank. The jar of the sudden stop, even moving slowly, rocked the raft, and Derek rolled against the lashings and almost fell in. Brian leaped forward on the raft, fell on Derek, and held him while the raft lurched, slid sideways, and settled against the bank where it stuck in the dirt and brush on the edge of the river. 100 yards, and they were stopped. Brian slid off the raft, waist deep in the water, pushed it sideways back out into the current, climbed back on, and sat for half a minute while the river curved back around to the right, and the raft jammed into the left bank. Another 50 yards. 150 yards, and they were stuck twice. Brian swore. "I'm going to have to improve this, or we'll be a month on this river." He worked the raft into the middle again, and it started to move. This time, as they came into a shallow curve and the raft started to move straight, he waited until the raft was close to the shore and used the pole to jam into the bottom and fend off. He still shot wide on the turn, but they didn't jam into the bank, and by the fifth curve he had found a way to use the crude paddle to steer the raft. He would come in close to the shore on the inside of a curve, then as soon as the raft was around it he paddled the stern over and aimed it down the center of the river and fought to keep it in the middle. They still did not always stay in the center of the best moving current, but as the afternoon wore on, Brian found that by frantically paddling through each curve, he kept the raft moving almost at the speed of the current and away from any brush or snags on the sides of the river. It worked, but the river curved almost constantly, moving through small swamps and beneath overhanging trees so thick it seemed to be a jungle, and he was constantly fighting the raft. Inside of 3 hours he felt his back and arms aching and knew that if he didn't stop to rest a bit now and then he would never be able to make it. He decided to stop every hour for 10 minutes. Derek had told him once that that was what the military did on long marches, a 10-minute break every hour, and by the end of the 4th hour he was more than ready for it. As it happened, the break came when the river straightened out, so he didn't lose any time. The raft kept sliding as he leaned back and rested his arms and back. He used his hands to cup water into his face, rubbing the back of his neck. The evening sun was still hot when it hit him as they came out of the patches of shade made by the trees on the bank, and the cool water on his neck refreshed him. "Let's see how we're doing." He opened the briefcase and took out the map. The river was accurately drawn, or seemed to be, and as near as he could figure it, they'd come about 8 miles. Not as good as he'd thought. 8 miles in 4 hours. 2 miles an hour. That meant 50 hours. 2 full days on top of the day they'd just used making the decision and getting ready to go. 4 days without water for Derek. He looked at the unconscious form and saw that the sun had burned his neck where the skin was exposed. Well, if Derek couldn't drink, Brian could still keep him cool. That might help. He took his T-shirt off and soaked it in the water. Brian used it as a cloth to wipe Derek's face and neck with cool water during his break. This ordeal was amazing to him, and he wondered at how it could be. Things happened so fast, changed so fast. Derek had been... No, he thought, Derek was still one of those people who seemed so alive. He was eager to learn, happy, bright. He seemed indestructible. Even now, lying on his side on the raft in the evening light, his chest rising and falling as he breathed, he looked like he would wake up any second. Cut down, that's how Brian thought of him. He had read a history of the Civil War, and the author had written about the men being cut down by fire. That's how Derek looked to Brian now, cut down, How could that be? Here he was, no different really. Had been in the same place at the same time, and he was all right, and Derek was cut down. He wiped Derek's face several times. All this time the raft had kept moving, and when his break was over, he saw that they were coming into another bend. He put the t-shirt back on, wet, and picked up the paddle and started to work, swinging the stern of the raft, keeping it in the middle of the current. It would be dark in an hour or so, but he thought that it wouldn't matter. His hands were raw from the rough wood of the paddle, and he thought that it wouldn't matter either. All that mattered now was to keep moving. In the night, that first night, he learned some things about himself. Not all of them were good. He had not slept the night before except to doze, kneeling next to Derek, and he had worked hard all day on the raft, getting it ready. And when the sun went down and the darkness caught him, he could not believe how much he wanted to sleep. There was a partial moon, a sliver, which gave enough light to see the river, or at least make out the main channel, but the light didn't help. Each time Brian's eyes closed to blink, they opened more slowly, and each time he had to fight to get them open. The mosquitoes helped for a time. They came out in their clouds with darkness before the evening cool slowed them, and Brian tried brushing them away from his face and Derek's, but it was like trying to brush smoke. As soon as his hand passed, they settled again, whining in the darkness, and after a bit, he just let them eat and kept paddling. Sleep would take him between strokes of the paddle. It would stop him so his arms would fall and the paddle would stop and lay in his lap. Then he would shake his head and snap out of it and start paddling again, just in time to make a turn, at least at first. Halfway through the night, nothing worked anymore, and his eyes closed and stayed shut. He dreamed mixes of things. His mother came to him, sitting on the other end of the raft. "It's all right," she said. "You can let go now. It's all right." And her voice was so soft, so gentle and soothing, that he wanted to let all of it go, not to be here. Not even in the dream. He was not sure how long he slept, but when he awakened, the raft was drifting on a large, flat plain of water, bobbing sideways. There was no sign of the river. In the faint moonlight, he could see no banks, knew no direction to travel. "But," he said aloud, the sound of his voice startled some animal, and there was a loud splashing to his right. A large animal, he thought, perhaps a moose. That meant there was a shore then, a bank for an animal to run on, close. So use thought, use logic, use it, think. The river was flowing generally southeast. It must have widened into a lake. The moon. The moon was straight overhead when he went to sleep. Now it was down a ways to the right, down to the west. Like the sun, it rose in the east, set in the west. The moon was about halfway down from overhead in the same direction as the splashing animal. So, Brian threw water in his face. So the river had widened into a lake, but he had moved along the west bank. If he kept moving the raft with the paddle, he should come to where the river narrowed again and pick up the current. He started paddling, the raft moving sluggishly now that there was no real current. He bore to the right, moving the raft sideways as he paddled until he could just make out the shoreline in the darkness, outlined in the moonlight. Then he straightened and started paddling again, steady, reaching forward with each stroke, bending at the waist, two on the right, two on the left. While the raft followed current well because the logs stuck down into the water and were not streamlined, for the same reason it moved with the paddling horribly. "It's like paddling a brush pile," he said to Derek. "Nothing seems to move." And in truth, it was very slow. He was not moving more than a mile an hour, and he wished he could read the map in the darkness. He didn't remember this lake or wide place or whatever it was, but if it was 2 miles long, it would take 2 full hours at least to cross it. Two on the left, two on the right. He slogged forward, and with the rhythm of the paddling, his brain settled into numbness again, and soon he was in the same trance that had led him to sleep. This time he stayed awake, but the hallucinations grew more and more intense. He saw the raft as a canoe and felt it fly forward with each stroke until he was leaving a wake of fire, fire waves curling out from the front of the raft, and he worried that it would catch the log's canoe on fire and burn them up, and how could water be on fire anyway? He would shake his head and then see his mother again at the other end of the raft. She would change into his father, who was smiling and beckoning him to paddle faster and faster. And then Derek's breath grew louder and louder until it filled his head, the lake, the world, with the rasping sound of his breathing, and Brian could hear Derek's heart as well, pounding on the logs of the raft, echoing until all he could hear was the keening rasp of Derek's breath and the pounding of his heart. He would shake his head and the raft would be jerking forward in the faint moonlight, Derek lying on his side, Brian leaning forward at the waist, two on the left, two on the right, the paddle pulling at the water in swirls. Three strokes, four, and he would be under again. At one point, something came swimming up alongside the raft, a muskrat or otter or beaver, cutting a V in the water as it swam next to Brian. And in a fraction of a second, his mind had turned it into the head of some beast, some underwater monster with its toothed head weaving back and forth, getting ready to attack, to sweep over and take him off the raft with huge teeth. And he set the paddle down and grabbed for the spear to kill the monster, make it go away before it could eat him. And he shook his head, and the vision disappeared as the animal dived, and the monster was gone, and he was alone with Derek again. He picked up the paddle and worked again, leaning forward. The bad thinking came sometime toward morning. He did not know how it started and would never know how it started and later did not wish to remember it when he did. Two nights without sleep tore at him and the raft seemed bolted down as he tried to get it along the edge of the lake to where the river moved again. Somewhere there, as he tried to keep the raft moving and fought sleep, there came the idea, the wild idea, the sick idea. The raft moved slowly because it was heavy. What made it heavy, sank it into the water so that it could not move, was the extra weight of the man tied in the middle. If the man were gone, it would be lighter, and he could move fast, and it would be better. It would be better if Derek were gone. What was the difference? He was dumb enough to rise up and get hit by the lightning, and he should be gone. Brian looked down at the still form and thought the thought. And it was so awful that he did not believe he was thinking it. But it was there, the thought. If Derek were gone, just gone. None of this would have happened if Derek weren't there. Not any of it. And if Derek were gone, gone somehow in the water. Gone down and down. No! He nearly screamed it, and the sound of his voice snapped him awake, alert, and he touched Derek's leg to make certain he was still there, that Brian hadn't cut him loose in the night, and that he would always be there, and that Brian would never even think the thought again, not even for an instant. All the way, he mumbled, reaching with the paddle again. We go all the way, together. He paddled another half hour, fighting sleep, and then at the same time he felt the coolness that he knew was morning coming, and he saw that the eastern sky was beginning to lighten. He stopped paddling, looked at the sky, and was amazed at how fast the dawn came. One moment it was so dark he couldn't see Derek on the raft, and the next he could make out the bank, see the trees in the gray light of dawn, and they were moving. The banks were moving along, even though he wasn't paddling. He'd done it. He was through the lake and had moved back onto the river, and the current had him. Thank you, he whispered, and realized when he said it that it was another kind of prayer, and that he was grateful not just for the river, the current, the movement, but the other thing as well. Coming through the night with Derek, grateful that he had made it. Thank you. With the arrival of good light, Brian took the map out and spread it on the briefcase. The lake he had crossed did not show. He was positive. There were lakes, some large and small, but he was not moving fast enough to have reached any of them yet, and that meant the map was not accurate. It showed clean river with narrow banks where he guessed the lake to be, and if it was inaccurate about this one thing, then it might be wrong about all things. Say the distance to the trading post. If the map had been made many years before and not updated, then the river might have changed direction. Might not even go by the trading post any longer. The trading post might not even be there. The thought stunned him, and he realized how foolish it had been to leave the lake and trust the map. There were so many variables, so many ways to go wrong. He studied the map again and took some heart from it. It was so definite. It must be basically right, close. Things could change, but not that much. The river was probably up a bit, and the lake he had come through in the night was a low place that filled when the river ran high, and not really a permanent lake that would be on the map. Sure, there was logic there, all right. All he had to do was test the map, find some way to ensure that it was mostly right. He put his finger on the river and followed it, tracing the path as the blue line cut through the green, followed it to where he thought he must be. There. If the map was right, and he was guessing right, he should be about where his finger had stopped. It showed a long, straight stretch, and the contour lines were spread far apart, which would indicate a large, low, or flat area where there might be a lake. Better yet, in a short distance, less than 2 miles, the contour lines came closer and closer together and showed 2 hills, one on either side of the river, just after a sharp S-turn. The raft was moving well now, and the morning sun was cutting away some of the ache and tiredness of the night. He put the map back in the briefcase and checked on Derek. His face was swollen from the mosquitoes in the night, his eyes puffy and shut, and Brian used his T-shirt to wipe cool water on Derek's face. He rinsed it in the river and dampened Derek's mouth with fresh, clean water. He wasn't sure if his eyes were being tricked or if it was real, but Derek looked thinner to him, and he wondered if getting thinner was a sign of dehydration. He dampened the T-shirt once more and put it over Derek's head. If he stays cool, Brian thought, cool and moist, it might help if I can keep him out of the sun. If the raft had a canopy, a cover, it would help. He paddled to the shore and jammed the raft into some willows and grass. It took him a half hour to use some green willows and swatches of grass to arrange a crude awning over Derek. It did not cover the whole man, but kept most of him in shade, and when it was done, Brian pushed the raft back out into the current and started moving again. He watched for the hills. Hunger came with the morning, and he started thinking about food. Cereal and milk. Toast. Bacon. Fried eggs. The smells of breakfast seemed to hang over the raft. It bothered him, but it was an old friend enemy. He made himself quit thinking of food, thought instead of what to do, planning each move of the day. Get a firm location. Figure his speed. Keep moving, a step at a time. Time. Time was so strange. It didn't mean anything. Then it meant everything. It was like food. When he didn't have it, he wanted it. When there was plenty of it, he didn't care about it. He stretched, sighed. You know, if we were in a canoe and had a lunch and a cooler full of pop, we'd think this was the most beautiful place in the world. And it was, he thought, truly beautiful. The trees, pines, and spruce and cedars towered so high they made the river seem to become narrow. And in places where the bank was cut away by the moving water, the trees had actually leaned out over the river until they were almost touching. They made the river seem like a soft green tunnel. The character of the river had changed. It happened almost suddenly, but with such a natural flow that Brian didn't notice it for a short time. The trees grew closer, the brush thicker, and the banks higher. Where they had been grassy and sloping away gradually, the banks were steeper and cut away, exposing the dirt and mud. The trees were so close and high that Brian would not be able to see the hills on the map when he came to them. He could see nothing but a wall of green. He wiped Derek's face several times. All this time the raft had kept moving, and when his break was over he saw that they were coming into another bend. He put the T-shirt back on, wet, and picked up the paddle and started to work, swinging the stern of the raft, keeping it in the middle of the current. It would get hot soon and cook him, but he thought that it wouldn't matter. His hands were raw from the rough wood of the paddle, and he thought that it wouldn't matter either. All that mattered now was to keep moving. He saw the hills from the map sooner than he thought he should see them, but they were the right ones, he was sure of it. They rose steeply ahead and on either side, rounded but high, covered with trees. It was just about noon, and the sun was beating down on him. He reached under the shelter and used the damp T-shirt to cool Derek again. "We're moving," he said, his voice thick with exhaustion, not believing it. "We're moving along now." And when he said it, he knew it was true. The raft was increasing in speed. Even as he watched, the speed seemed to pick up. "We're hauling..." He started, then trailed off as it dawned on him. The contour lines being close together on the map meant that the banks steepened between the hills. If there were hills and steep banks, the river might drop, fall a bit. He reached for the briefcase to take another look at the map, but stopped with his hand halfway out. A sound. Some sound was there that at first he could not place. It was so soft he could almost not hear it at all over the sounds of the birds. But there it was again. A hissing? Was that it? No. It was lower than that. Not to be heard, but felt. A whooshing. Water. A water sound. A rumbling sound. The sound of water moving fast, dropping, falling. Falling water. A waterfall. They were heading for a waterfall. There was no time left. The river had narrowed slightly, but now there was more of a drop and the speed had increased dramatically. They were dead in the middle of the river, and Brian knew he had to get to shore, had to stop, but there was no time. Twice as fast as he could walk, the raft was fairly careening now. The sound was louder. If he tried to paddle for shore, he would succeed only in turning the raft sideways. He was not sure how he could get over a waterfall, if indeed he could at all, but he was fairly certain he did not want to try it with the raft sideways. If it went the long way over the waterfall, it would be harder to roll over. Sideways, and it would roll easily. The sound was a definite rumble now, and in seconds they wheeled around a bend, and Brian could see it. God! It was a whisper. It was not a waterfall, but it might as well have been. The river moved between two large stone bluffs that formed the sides of the two hills Brian had seen on the map. The bluffs forced the river to a narrower width, deeper, and at the same time aimed it through some boulders that had split off either side and dropped in the middle. All of this had the effect of making a monstrous chute where the water fought and roared to get through, smashing around the rocks in huge sprays of white water, and the raft was aimed right down the middle of the chute. Things happened so fast after that there was not a way he could prepare for it. The raft seemed to come alive, turn into a wild, crazy animal. The front end took the river, swung down and into the current, grabbed the madness of the water, and ran with it. Brian had just time to look down at Derek, just time to see that he was still tied to the raft securely, and they were into it. The raft bucked and tore at the water, slammed sideways. Brian tried to steer, using the paddle to swing the stern to the left and right, trying to avoid the boulders, but it was no use. The water owned the raft, owned Derek, owned him. In the roaring, piling thunder of the river, he had no control. They were flying. The logs of the raft rearing out of the water on pressure ridges, slamming back down so hard it rattled his teeth. In the middle of the chute was a boulder, huge, gray, wet with waves and spray, and the raft aimed directly at the center of it. He had time to scream, sound lost in the roar of water, and throw himself on Derek. The raft wheeled slightly to the left and struck the boulder. Brian thought for part of a second that they had made it. Derek's body lurched beneath him and dropped back. The raft took the blow, flexed, gave, but held together, and Brian started one clear thought. We made it. Then it hit. There was an underwater boulder next to the giant in the middle of the river. Hidden by a pressure wave, it lay sideways, out and to the left, halfway to the left wall. The nose of the raft made it, carried over by the pressure ridge, hung for a second, then dropped, plummeted down. As it tipped forward, the rear of the raft cut down into the water and came against the submerged ledge. Wonk! Brian heard it hit, felt the impact and the sound through his whole body. He grabbed, tried to hold on to the logs beneath Derek, but it was no use. The stern kicked off the ledge, slapped him up and away, clear of the raft, completely in the air. He hung for a split instant in midair, looking down on the raft, on Derek. Then he plunged down, down into the boiling, ripping water. Everything was madness. Frothy green bubbles, hissing, roiling water. He came up for a moment, saw the raft shooting away downstream, carrying Derek. Then he was down again, mashed down and tumbled by the pressure wave, smashed into the rocks on the bottom, and all he could think was that he had to stay alive, had to get up, get air, get back to the raft. But the wave was a great weight on him, a house on him. The world was on him, and he could not move up against it. He fought and clawed against the rock, broke his face free, then was driven down again, hammered into the bottom, sideways. He'd have to work sideways. Smashed, buffeted, he dragged himself to the side beneath the pressure wave. It became stronger. He could not rise, could not get air, and his lungs seemed about to burst, demanded that he breathe, even if it was water. He willed the urge away, down, but it grew worse, and just when he knew it was over, when he would have to let the water in, when he would die, just then he made the edge of the pressure wave at the side of the boulder. The current roared past the rock and took him like a chip, sucking him downstream. He brought his head clear for one tearing breath, opened and shook water out of his eyes long enough to see that the raft was gone, out of sight. Then he was driven back under, down to the bottom, smashing into boulders in a roaring green thunder, end over end until he knew nothing but the screaming need to breathe, to live, and then his head smashed into something explosively hard, and he thought nothing at all. Bright light flashed inside Brian's eyes, red and glaring, and he opened them to find that he was on his back, staring directly at the sun. Ugh! He rolled onto his stomach and spit and nearly choked on water. He was in the shallows below the rapids, caught up in a small alcove in the shoreline. The water was 6 or 7 inches deep with a gravel bottom. His senses returned, and with them came the realization that he was all right. He was bruised, but nothing was broken. He'd taken a little water, but apparently had coughed it out. He was all right. Derek. The words slammed into him. Somehow he had forgotten. He stood. His legs were a bit wobbly, but they held, and looked down the river. It stretched away for a half a mile, becoming more calm and peaceful as it dropped, nestled in trees and thick brush, a blue line in a green background. Birds flew across the water. Ducks swam. There was no raft. Brian turned, stood dripping, looking upriver into the rapids. From below they did not look as bad. The pressure waves appeared smaller. Even the boulder didn't seem as large. There was still the sound of the water, although that, too, was muted. But there was no raft. No Derek. Derek! He yelled, knowing it was futile. He looked downriver again. There was no way the raft would have stopped in the rapids. It had to have come down, floated on downstream. What had he seen? He frowned, trying to remember what had happened. Oh, yes. The wave. The big submerged rock and the wave. The great wave had taken the raft, and he had seen that, the raft moving off downriver. He did not think it had tipped. He seemed to remember that it was upright. But Derek, was he still on the raft? He couldn't remember for certain, but it seemed that he was. Everything was so confused. Tumbling in the rapids seemed to have shaken his brain loose. He fought panic. Things were what they were. If the raft rolled or if Derek fell off the raft, then, that was it. If not, Derek might still be all right. I have to figure he's still alive. And if Derek was still on the raft, still alive, he was downriver. Brian had to catch him, catch the raft. He started to move along the bank and did well for 50 or so yards. The bottom was gravel, spilled out by the rapids, but then it ended. The river moved rapidly back into flatter country, swamps, lakes, and the first thing that happened was the bottom turned to mud. Brian tried to move to the bank and run, but the brush was so thick and wild that it was like a jungle. Grass, willows, and thick vines grabbed at him, holding him. He moved back into the river, where the mud stopped him. If he tried to walk, when his weight came down, his feet sunk and just kept on going, 2, 3 feet. The mud was so thick it pulled his right tennis shoe off, and when he groped to find it, the mud held his arm, seemed to pull at him, tried to take him down. He lost the shoe, clawed back to the bank, and knew there was only one way to chase the raft. I'll have to swim. But how far? Didn't matter, he thought. Derek was down there somewhere. Brian had to catch him. He shook his head, took off his remaining shoe, and left it on the bank. He kept his pants on, they were not so heavy, and entered the river, pushed away from the bank until he was far enough out to start floating a bit. He kicked off the mud and began to swim. Within 3 strokes, he knew how tired he was. His whole body felt weak and sore from the beating he'd taken in the rapids. But he could not stop. He worked along the edge, half swimming, half pushing along with his feet in the mud, downriver. He had to catch the raft. He became something other than himself that afternoon. When he began to swim, after he'd overcome the agony of starting and his muscles had loosened somewhat, he tried to think. The raft would move with the current if it did not get hung up. Brian would also move with the current, plus he had the added speed of swimming and he should gain rapidly. But when he rounded that first bend and did not see the raft, and cleared the next bend 200 yards further on and did not see the raft, worry took him. He stopped at the side and stood as much as he could in the mud. It was nearly a quarter of a mile to the next bend, and there was no raft. Every muscle in his body was on fire. He slipped back into the water and began swimming again, taking long, even strokes, kicking and pushing along the mud, pulling himself forward. Another bend, and another, always reaching, and always Brian's eyes sought the still form, the thatched top of the raft. Nothing. The river seemed to have swallowed Derek. Altogether he rounded 6 shallow bends, and still there was no raft. The stupid raft that had hung up on every bend when he was trying to steer it, and now perversely held the center of the river somehow. There was nothing but the green wall along either side, the trees that grew higher and higher now that the rock hills were past, until they nearly closed over the top of the river, the green wall that closed in and covered him as he slid along the water, wanting to scream, but pulling instead, always pulling, a stroke, then another stroke, until there was not a difference between him and the water, until his skin was the water and the water was him, until he was the river and he came to the raft. He nearly swam past it. Brian moved near some willows, his face down in the water, reaching with his left arm, and when he raised his head, he was looking at the raft. It had somehow come through all the bends and curves, and here must have caught a slight cross-current. The raft had moved to the outside of a shallow curve and had glided back beneath some overhanging willows and low trees. All that showed was the rear end of the raft and the bottom of Derek's shoes. "Derek!" Brian's hand had almost brushed the raft, but had he not looked up at the exact point that he had, he would have missed it. He grabbed the raft, pulled himself up alongside. Derek lay still, though his body had moved, twisted sideways on the raft. "Derek," he said again, softer. Derek's head was still to the side, the eyes half open, but if he had been pushed underwater in the rapids, even for a moment, it might be too late. "Derek." He looked done, gone, dead. Brian tried his wrist but could feel no pulse. He watched Derek's chest, but it didn't seem to move. He leaned down, put his ear against Derek's mouth, held his breath. There. Softly on his ear, a touch of breath. Once, then again, small puffs of air. Derek! He was alive, still alive. It was as if everything came loose in Brian at the same time. His body, his mind, his soul were all exhausted, and he fell across Derek, asleep or unconscious, fell with his legs still in the water. Derek! Suddenly he was paddling. His eyes were open, and he was kneeling in back of Derek, and he was leaning forward with the paddle, and he did not have the slightest idea of how he'd come to be there. He had a new paddle in his hands, carved roughly from a forked branch with a piece of Derek's pant leg pulled across the fork to form the face of the paddle. Brian was moving the raft and the sun was shining down on him, and it was all, everything, completely new to him. A different world. I must have slept and moved in my sleep. The briefcase was gone, torn off in the rapids, and with it the map. Not that it mattered. The banks were just all green and the river went ahead to the next bend. The trees hung over the top, and there was nothing to see but a slot of sky and the water ahead and the endless, endless green. Nothing to match with a map. He could no longer think anyway. He had no idea how far they had come, how many hours or days they had been traveling, or how far it still was to the trading post. He could only pull now, only pull with the paddle. He knew absolutely nothing except the raft and the paddle and his hands, which had gone beyond bleeding now and were sores that stuck to the shaft of the crude paddle, knew nothing but the need, the numbing, crushing need to get Derek somewhere, somewhere, somewhere down the river. Food, hunger, home, distance, sleep, the agony of his body, none of it mattered anymore. Only the reach, the bend forward at the waist, the pull back with the arms, two on the left, two on the right. two left, two right, two, two. Into that long day and that long night he moved the raft, so beyond thought now that even the hallucinations didn't come. Nothing was there but the front of the raft, Derek and the river. The river. Sometime in the morning of the next day, any day, 1,000 days or 8 days, he could not tell, somewhere in that morning the river widened and made a sweeping curve to the left, widened to 1/2 mile or more, and he saw or thought he could see a building roof, a straight line in the trees that did not look natural, and then he heard it, the sound of a dog barking, not a wolf or a coyote, but a dog. There was a small dock. People had dogs that barked, and they had docks. He kept pulling, still not able to think or do anything but stroke, pulled to the edge of the river until the raft nudged against the dock, bounced, and then the paddle dropped. He was done. Above him on the bank he saw a small brown and white dog barking at him, its tail jerking with each bark, the hair of his back raised. As Brian watched, the round face of a young boy appeared next to the dog. "Help. Help me," Brian thought he said, but heard no sound. The face of the boy disappeared, and in moments two more people came, a man and woman, and they ran down to the dock and looked down at Brian, and he was crying up at them, his torn hands hanging at his sides, down in the water, down in the river. The river. "Derek." Hands took him then. Hands pulled him onto the dock, and the man jumped in the water and untied Derek and took him as well. Hands, strong hands to help. It was over. Brian, Derek, and the raft traveled 119 miles down a river with an average current speed of 2 miles an hour in just under 63 hours. When Brian started, the raft weighed approximately 200 pounds, but soaking up water all the way, it nearly doubled its weight by the time they reached the trading post, which was actually nothing more than a small cabin on the river where trappers could bring their furs. The post was owned and manned by a husband, wife, and one small boy, but they had a good radio and could call for help. Derek's coma was low grade, and in truth he probably would have been all right even if Brian had not made the run, although he would have suffered significantly from dehydration. He began to come out of the coma in another week and had fully recovered within 6 months. During the run, Brian lost 12 pounds, mostly in fluids, though he drank river water constantly to make up for it, and his hands became infected from bacteria in the water. He healed rapidly. His hands became amazingly tough and strangely suffered no real long-range difficulties from the run down the river, probably because his earlier time, the time, had taught him so well. His mother and father vowed never to let him go in the woods again, but relented after some little time when Brian pointed out that of all people who were qualified to be in the wilderness, he was certainly one of them. About 7 months after the incident, Brian was sitting alone at home, wondering what to cook for dinner, when the doorbell rang, and he opened the door to find a large truck parked in the street in front of the house. "Brian Robeson?" the driver asked. Brian nodded. "Got some freight for you." The driver went to the rear of the truck, opened it, and pulled out a 16-foot Kevlar canoe with paddles taped to the thwarts. It was a beautiful canoe, light and graceful with gentle curving lines that made it look wonderfully easy to paddle. Written in gold letters on each side of the bow were the words, "The Raft." "It's from a man named Derek Holzer," the driver said, setting the canoe on the lawn. "There's a note taped inside." He climbed back in the truck and drove away, and Brian found the note. "Next time," he read aloud, "it won't be so hard to paddle. Thanks."
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The River by Gary Paulson, read for you by Peter Coyote. This program was produced by Blaine and DeRosa Productions. Text copyright 1991 by Gary Paulson. Production copyright 1993, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment. It's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.